What is... Dax, are you...
Tracking all our cars on Carvana Value Tracker? On all our devices? Yes, Kristen, yes I am.
Well, I've been looking for my phone for...
In Dax's domain, we see all. So we always know what our cars are worth.
All of them?
All of them. Value surge! Trucks up 3.9%!
That's a great offer.
I know. Sell?
Sell.
Track your car's value with Carvana Value Tracker today.
Warm up the grill, grab a beverage, and paint your face.
How do you like yours, Clark?
Oh, medium rare, a little pink inside.
Now you're fine. Light or dark?
This is Danny and Dusty on Conference Championship Week.
Brought to you by Smartline Home Design, a trusted local architectural design studio ready to bring your dream home to life. Visit smartlinehomedesign.com.
Danny and Dusty on the Odyssey app and 1080.
Vicky, can I help you with that Kool-Aid? Please.
The Fan.
Good afternoon. Hey, welcome in. Happy Tuesday, everybody. Danny and Dusty with you. Boy, that football weekend, football, so hard. So great. What an awesome weekend of football. It was just great all the way around, start to finish.
It was wonderful.
What are you doing?
Sorry, I was trying to put this tweet out real quick. It was wonderful. I think every single game delivered.
Yeah.
Every single game delivered.
Yeah. Detroit, Washington left a little on the bone, but it was a rookie quarterback being incredible. I'll give you that. But every game was, except for that one, coming down to the wire and gave you a little something to talk about and a little bit more to ask. I think coming out of every game, to your point, there is plenty to talk about with every single one of those games, including the good with the Commanders and what lies ahead for them in playing in a conference championship game, and what question marks arise for the Detroit Lions. Yeesh. Coming out of that, because there's some biggins now that you're replacing both coordinators likely.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean,
one for sure.
If we get through today's show without Aaron Glenn going to the Jets, I'll be surprised.
Yeah.
It sounds like it. I believe that the discussion this morning is they don't want to let him out of the building.
Big domino to fall was Ben Johnson. He's going to be the Bears' new head coach.
Which, good.
That is good.
Good.
And his very first introduction, like, we just haven't heard a lot from Ben Johnson. You don't hear him talk because he is a coordinator. Boy, he commanded the room when he walked into Hallis Hall for the first time and introduced himself to all the employees. I was like, yep, that dude's got it. He's got energy. He has got command of a room. He doesn't seem like he's going to be a guy like, Ben, what was it? Ben, it's not Ben McAdoo. It was, right? Ben McAdoo, the old Giants head coach who wore like his suit two sizes too big.
And, oh, yeah.
You know, couldn't talk in front of a room of people that work really for him. Ben Johnson walked into that room and just dominated Hallis Hall. That was awesome to see. I like him. They've got a big hill to climb with having a terrible offensive line, but you've got a quarterback, so I'm in. Ben Johnson, he's the first coaching domino to fall to where now everybody else seems like they're going to all just kind of fall in line, right? It looks like Aaron Glenn is going to the Jets, even though Ben Johnson wasn't a target for the Jets. Liam Cohen is going to be going down to Jacksonville over from Tampa Bay, the Buccaneers offensive coordinator. I don't know who's going to take the Dallas job. Apparently, Brian Schottenheimer's name is popping up as a legitimate candidate for that job.
That's one out of the hat.
Robert, well, he was the offensive coordinator, and we all know how Jerry Jones loves to keep his offensive coordinators around. Kellen Moore was forced to be Mike McCarthy's offensive coordinator for a while. It seems like we're now starting to have all of these coaching dominoes fall. Haven't heard much. What's the latest with your Raiders?
I mean, Ben Johnson was the guy, apparently, and I don't know where they go on the pivot from this.
They were saying during the herd, apparently, Pete Carroll might be option number one now.
Wouldn't surprise me. Get the patchwork guy. Get the vibes.
Yeah. Culture. Turn culture around.
Because Lord knows they need that.
Yeah, they do. And there, it's not like there's a slam dunk offensive name, especially if like Liam Cohen goes to Jacksonville. Mm-hmm. And now that Ben Johnson is in Chicago.
Let
like,
Pete go for 2-3 years.
Yeah. Hopefully he hires somebody young that is an offensive mind with the idea that,
which
hey, you could.
Done pretty well with.
Yeah. Yeah, he historically, has. Well, so. Yeah, the offensive guys have, his defensive coordinators always seem to be really stinking good.
Yeah.
But offensive guys, you know, their offense plays complementary football to his defense. But we'll see. Maybe he can find himself a young Sark or Lane Kiffin.
Well, I was saying, like, he's
well,
done,
that
like,
was in college though. Yeah. But you're, the NFL is a different animal in that regard. But we'll see. Hopefully he, you know what? Pete Carroll would not be, I would be like, you know what? Functional hire. And that's what you're looking for right now.
Because organizationally, they're not very functional.
Functional hires.
Like, if the biggest pushback to Pete is he's old and he won't be here for a long time, like, okay. You know what I mean? Like, so you're telling me he's a good coach culturally. Mm-hmm. It makes sense. Mm-hmm. Like, you trust him. Mm-hmm. There's not questions about him. Mm-hmm. But he's old. Because we all know he can relate to players, regardless of age.
Sure. Yeah.
So. Can do that.
I think it would be a good it's a good start.
This is me talking myself into it, but also
as you should. As you should. That's
also
part of being a fan.
I'm not against it.
There's worse hires that you guys could go down.
And Pete Carroll is probably the youngest, 73-year-old on the planet.
Yes. Mm. Yes.
That's also talking yourself into it, you know? Yeah. Yeah, but we're gonna do it. Yeah. Pete Carroll to the Raiders. Bring him back. Let's go. Huh? Good answer. Good answer.
And there's no wrong answers in the feud.
Mm. There are in coaching searches, but in this one, no. All right. Everybody have a good weekend?
Just fantastic weekend. You
hear me? No, I just don't know what else happened.
So much football.
I footballed really hard.
I had a very vigorous massage.
Oh.
I'm very sore today.
Okay.
There you go. A little self-care. We talked about this last time. I've done the upgraded the cupping.
Okay.
It's tough.
All right.
The guys that have it done regularly, it's a lot, man.
Yeah.
It's a lot.
Yeah.
Like the back, not so much, but it's the legs. The legs hurt a lot.
And you're cupping.
Mm-hmm.
You're doing the cupping.
Uh-huh.
What does the cupping do for a normal guy? Like an athlete, Michael Phelps was the first person that we saw with the
really
cupping.
Doing it, yeah.
Yeah, in the Olympics, and you're like, why does it look like he got
attacked by octopus?
A bunch of hickeys on him all over the place. What does it do for the normal person? I'm not good. I don't know a lot about cupping.
What's funny is
I've never had it done.
There's been a couple different studies I've seen that say it does. It is good for breaking up and loosening things. I've seen some more recently that have also said it does. There's no direct correlation. My whole thing is if they think it's going to work for me,
yeah,
I'm going to go for it.
Go with the junk science.
Look, if I feel better, cool.
Yeah.
And it sucks.
Might work.
It usually sucks for a day, but after that, things do feel better.
All right.
So.
Well, good.
But I have it done on my legs because of all of the issues that I have, and it does keep things from getting very, 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 very tight.
Well, good. Okay. So that's what cupping does. Yeah. It basically
breaks
just,
it up.
All right. There we go.
It makes it to where, like, I can't get my legs, like, worked on.
Yeah.
Because they're so tight sometimes.
Mm.
Yeah, it's a problem. So they do that to kind of break it up so they can start doing treatment.
All right. Russ, good weekend? Good weekend all the way around?
Yeah. We went and saw, Den of Thieves 2 this weekend.
Oh, is it out already?
Snap.
Yeah.
You guys, just you and the wife?
Yeah.
Okay.
Was this like a dopamine hit?
Do you take the kids to Den of Thieves? What do you guys got going on over there, Russ?
At home. We did it at the one of the Cinemark theaters. We did their D-Box seats.
All right, what's that?
So it's got they recline and everything, and they do the whole, like, the rumble seat, you know, with the vibrating and stuff.
Ooh.
But they've got, like, haptic movements in it, too. So, like, when you get, like, to a car chase scene, the seat, you know, will rock back and forth or forward and backward. Yeah,
that's cool.
D-Box, not to be confused with D-Bag seats.
Yeah, D-Box seats. Mm. Okay.
Yeah.
I see these all the time, like when you're going to buy a movie ticket, and you're like, I don't know what any of this means. Because it'll say, like, D-Box. Okay. It'll say, I don't know. There's, like, four different options at some of these. And you're like, I don't know what the difference is here.
I bought tickets to a closed caption show on accident once.
Ooh, okay, that's rough.
All yeah, because right. I can't handle the subtitles.
Yeah, you just will always just read a movie. Yeah.
And it's like, I hate that.
Oh, my kid, my 8-year-old, she turns the captions on all the time.
Really?
Oh, God. Yeah. It's so gross.
Why?
I don't know. She's a tremendous reader, though.
Well, there you go. There's a positive to watching television then.
Yeah.
Yeah. We did the math on this one. This was the first weekend I've been home since August.
Oh, really?
Oh, man. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Since August. So it was great. I didn't do much of anything.
Mm.
We had our first third, fourth grade basketball game. And the score was a lot too little. We were on the wrong side of that.
Oh, no.
We're moving forward.
Okay.
We're moving forward.
Not watching the tape on that one.
We're not. If it existed, we wouldn't do it. But it was good. We had a lot of fun. We won in fun. And,
okay.
Yeah, we learned that 7 of our 10 had never played full court on a 10-foot hoop before.
Oh.
Because this is the age where a lot of them... Oh, this is
the graduation from the 8 to the 10?
Well, yeah, you're going up, and it's a full court, and that was an experience for them.
Yep.
That was a big learning curve. So we're on it. We're on it right now. Good thing is, record's 0-0, because they don't keep score. Which everybody keeps score.
Yeah.
Everybody was keeping that score.
Pretending otherwise is foolish.
That's right.
Are we got kids hitting the gritty after every bucket?
No. It's a lot of, what do I do now?
Oh. Okay.
And they're like, get back.
So it's not that league. Okay, perfect.
You just get, no.
That you know tape I'm talking about.
Oh, I know.
The clip.
Yeah, this is not.
The kids hitting the too small after every basket?
Yeah, this is not that. Okay. This is not that league.
Okay.
This is not that league that we're in right now.
Okay.
This is a basketball.
We're running shot clocks. We go in four corners.
You could go four corners. Ooh. You could run the stall if you wanted to. That would mean that you have to.
It's a tough look.
Well, you'd have to be able to pass and dribble. Like, those things are hard.
Yeah. Right. JJ Redick was talking about how kids are coached. It was a clip that kind of resurfaced. And he's like, most kids until they're like 14 can't make a two-handed pass. Like, where it needs to go. Like, it needs to be a one-handed baseball pass.
Yeah.
And it's like, the fact that we don't treat that so differently. Like, he was basically saying that they should play on, like, the 8-foot rims longer. And that they should, like, progress later in life.
I agree with that. Yeah. I agree with that. I just think, like, I'm going to be running, like, a Slovenian basketball camp going on.
Okay,
we are going to be strictly fundamentals.
There you
here.
Go. Look, man.
You know,
it'll pay off in the long run.
We are going to take this back to the Eastern Bloc. Mm-hmm. I mean,
why do you think they crank out so many good players?
It's all just fundamentally sound basketball.
Slovenia is like 3 million people as a country, and they've got like 40 NBA players.
We're going to go to the fundamentals here. We are going to two hand passing.
Mm-hmm.
That's going to be it.
Moving without the ball.
That's what I'm talking about.
Nobody wants to do it in the U.S., man.
It's you want to know why?
Because
you know what's a lot easier to do? Roll the ball out and just be like, go.
Yeah. Regiment.
I mean, it really is, but you got it.
Are you guys running the wristbands?
No, what?
Oh, so at the younger ages, this is what they do. They put wristbands on each kid on opposite teams.
Oh, yeah.
And that's
supposed
to go.
No, we don't. Yeah, okay. that's no.
We progressed past
really,
that?
Yeah. We have been there.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Dude, it's crazy.
Yeah.
It's wild out there.
No, it's trust me. I've been watching the first and second grade basketball.
It's what happens, dude.
It's it's tough. I'm like, part of me is like, they're just kids. But part of me is like, they should know, like, better, right?
No.
Like, my function, because I don't have kids yet, like, my functional ability to relate, like, brain function at a certain age, I'm like, what do they do at that
You know
age?
What the best part is, though, is, like, when you're like, we could do this, and then you talk to your parents or your old coaches, and they're like, no, you couldn't. like, we wish we had those. And you're like, oh.
In terms of they should know better, my 8-year-old still picks her nose and eats it, so. This is the good reader we're talking about,
too. Let he who has not cast the first stone.
Hey, you know, Ren and Stimpy kind of changed the game on that. Mm. People said, like, Ren and Stimpy wasn't educational. Dude, Ren and Stimpy taught me what a booger wall was.
Stimpy, you fat, bloated idiot.
God, what a great show. Show definitely made for children. Vancouver Ford text line calling back here. Closed caption is superior, to be honest. No, it's not. You're a psychopath.
There's a lot of people who feel that way.
Yeah, psychopaths.
There are a lot of people that feel closed captioning is the way to go.
Go read a book.
I disagree with that.
Go read a book.
I find it distracting. I might have ADD.
I don't want to read my movie.
It's undiagnosed, but it distracts me, and I'm always just like, nah.
See, like at night, though, if we're going to bed and we've got the TV on and the wife's kind of halfway asleep and I'm still watching TV, I'll turn the captions on then so I don't have the TV too loud and I can still pick up what's going down.
Yeah.
But, you know, yeah.
My wife doesn't let me have the TV on in the bedroom, so.
You should, I would imagine you being a headphones guy, Bluetooth headphones guy.
Nope.
No, you'll just close caption it?
Yep.
All right. Have you thought about it?
Not till you just said it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was recommended to me, and I was like, you know what? That could solve a lot of the problems here. Yeah. You know, watching things that I would enjoy watching, but my wife is like, I don't want to watch this. You know, I just throw it on. You know, I could watch Squid Games 2, Season 2. You know how many parts of the episodes I've seen? Like, I'm almost two episodes in. I've had to watch it in like four installments here. That's so frustrating. But now I'm thinking of doing the Bluetooth headphones, and that way I can just pop those on. She's none the wiser because she can't hear any of the gunshots or anything like that. And there we go. Problem solved. It's a problem solving technique. Mm. And you just can't watch any at all, huh?
I don't want to watch. I don't want to read my movie.
Yeah.
And everybody's like, oh, yeah. No. The whole, like.
Well, you could go. You could be headphones TV guy, too. I could see all of us being headphones TV guy. I'm about to be one. I'll let you know.
When I'm in my office, when I'm working, like, I throw the headphones in, and whether I'm watching TV or listening to music, whatever, like, I just. Oh yeah.
As you're typing,
it's more screaming.
Okay.
But,
yep. That also,
you know,
that fits.
But my wife will come in there and she will hear the music and she will just be like, "How do you work with that?" I'm like, "It calms me."
Yeah.
Like in a very zen state of screaming.
Yeah, I would love for a therapist listening right now to break you down. Just take it on. Maybe in the summer we'll bring a therapist in when it's a slow time and just have a therapist just break us both down.
We do have a couch.
Yeah.
Yeah, sales, if you're listening, you want to get a, if somebody's out there, want to as part of a sales pitch here.
Yeah.
Have a little psychoanalyst come in here and do some, I mean, that might be a little, tough for both of us.
I don't know. I think even BetterHelp might be like, there's not much we can do with this cat.
Yeah. All of a sudden, it just like starts being directed at me, and they're like, you may be savable.
Yeah.
All right. 503-864-6326. That's a Vancouver Ford text line. Let's get to it, man. We got so much football that we need to football today. I don't know how we can get this all in.
We won't.
I want to, because every game deserves its it deserves its flowers. And I think where we start, championships. We talk champions here. Ohio State, they did it, man. And boy, were they impressive in this four-game run to a college football playoff national championship. And it's exactly what the 12-team playoff was set to accomplish. Danny and Dusty on The Fan.
They've been talked all year about being aggressive. This does not strike me as aggressive. 27-yard try for Mitch Jeter. And it's not a fake. And he hit the left upright. It's no good.
Sean McDonough on the call right here on The Fan, ESPN Radio, as that was the nail in the coffin for the Notre Dame Fighting Irish. They fall to the Ohio State Buckeyes 34-23. That missed field goal right there, it was 31-15 at that point. Mm-hmm. You're sitting there and you're going, but why? Well, you're playing the numbers game down 31-15, that you're down by 16 points. That would have made it a 13-point game. You would have needed two scores somehow. I don't necessarily agree with
doesn't
it.
Doesn't really. I mean, even the analytics said go for the touchdown there.
But they absolutely did. But your offense, in the way that they were operating, told you, you can't really score that quick.
Mm, yeah. Which is why you go get those points then and there. But
and I think it's hindsight, too, because they went down, they scored on a quick drive after that, on a two-minute drive that made it 31-23, the event, almost final score there, mm-hmm. right? And at that point, you're sitting there going, see, they should have gone for it and gotten the touchdown. I was confused by some of the decisions that Marcus Freeman and Notre Dame made, mainly the fake punt that they went for. Mm-hmm. That one didn't make sense because it's 4th and 2. You're going to have your backup quarterback throw that out route instead of just keeping your offense on the field.
Which Riley Leonard, if you're going to, like, the only functional running that you had all game was him plowing forward in short yardage situations.
Boy.
Because you couldn't get anything else otherwise. Just kind of rolling this thing back. The score is 31-7.
Mm-hmm.
They find Emeka Ebuka, and he breaks free. And he looks like he's off to the races, and he's got poor ball security. Notre Dame forces the fumble.
Mm-hmm.
At that point in time, if Ebuka doesn't fumble the ball, this game is over. Ohio State was still had their foot down, stepping on the neck of Notre Dame, and they are mauling them up and down the field. That fumble rattled Ohio State, and it got Notre Dame a little bit of juice. And mm-hmm. That was kind of the point, hilariously, Lou Holtz was making about them not being able to play in a tight game kind of situation, because Ohio State got tight, and they all of a sudden they did start making mistakes, and they did start questioning themselves, and they can't sit there and be the team that just grinds you into dust. That's not who they are. That's not their MO. Now, they can ring points up on you,
yep.
But trying to salt the game away by just pounding the ball, that's not really who they are. And as they did that, it gave Notre Dame another chance and another chance and another chance, mm-hmm. because Ohio State got out of their DNA of just swinging for the fences.
But they end up, that was a no-doubter.
Oh, yeah. I said that the line should have been 16.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, again, if Ebuka scores, this thing's sideways. I mean, they hang, you know, 40-plus on them, and maybe Notre Dame gets another touchdown. It ends up being like a 41-14 game.
You know what the average final score of a college football playoff game or final has been?
No.
Since we've had the four-team final? 41.8 to 21.7.
Blowouts.
Yeah. This one was a little bit closer. And I think exactly why the expansion of the college football playoff from 2-4, 4-12. This is why people wanted it, and this is why it worked. Because Ohio State would not have been in a four-team playoff. If this was a year ago, Ohio State would have been at home. And I've been saying this since Stanford with Andrew Luck got left at home, and they ended up having to go and win the Orange Bowl.
Mm-hmm.
It is that the best team in college football isn't always the one with the best record over the course of the season. It is a team that is playing the best at the end of the year. And you could even say that with Ohio State losing to Michigan, they weren't.
No.
But that team was so talented. Talent took over. And I'm really glad that Ryan Day didn't pull the nobody believed in us card.
We were
at
waiting
the end of
it.
That game. Absolutely. Because it wasn't that nobody believed in the talent of Ohio State. They didn't believe in Ryan Day to get him over the hump. And I will say this about Ryan Day got them over that hump. Ryan Day is the reason why they were able to harness all of that talent and put it together. All the critics and all the naysayers to Ryan Day will say, oh, well, they're just ultra talented. No, you have to be able to harness that.
Well,
because
we've seen great teams.
We have seen so many great teams not fulfill the talent that they have.
Specifically Ohio State.
He got them over that hump. And that four-game run in the playoffs was masterful.
Mm-hmm.
It was masterful by Chip Kelly as the offensive coordinator, who was in his bag again last night with play recall and going back to the well on things that he's done 3 and 4 years ago. Plays that they installed this past week.
That counter to, was it Judkins? I think it was Judkins, where they run the fly motion off the tight end, and it looks like everything's going left, everybody goes left, and he hits that cutback as designed.
He did it with Jeremiah Smith on that touchdown, too, where he short motioned him like he's going over the top in an orbit motion.
Brings
boom, comes right back, and nobody's there. Like, that was something, that was the same play Alabama ran with Devontae Smith. Mm-hmm. Like, he was in a play calling mode. And mm-hmm. look, for Ryan Day, it may have been just letting Chip do his damn thing in the playoff.
Yeah.
Because this offense went to another level. Jim Knowles and the soul searching that they did after they played Oregon and lost to Oregon mm-hmm. in October. And they said, we need to change some stuff. Their defense has been completely different ever since then. That Ohio State team, they also faced adversity early in that game, where if Notre Dame was going to win that game, we talked about this, like, I don't know how they score enough points. And that's really what ended up happening, is that they couldn't score enough points because Ohio State was going to get theirs. We knew that they were going to get theirs. But the way that Notre Dame was going to stay in that game was exactly how they started it. 18 plays, 75 yards, 9 minutes and 45 seconds off the clock. They were going to have to sustain drives, keep the offense off the field for Ohio State, and just plug away. What ended up happening where that game got out of hand is after that opening drive where they went 18 plays and 75 yards and take damn near 10 minutes off the clock.
They got nothing.
They did not pick up a first down mm-hmm. for another 27 minutes and 23 seconds of game time. Not real time.
That's like an hour of real
time. Of game time. It was like the 6:45 mark mm-hmm. of the third quarter was the next first down that Ohio State gave up to Notre Dame. That's not how you were going to do it. And in that span, in that 27 minutes and 23 seconds of game time, Ohio State scored on every single drive. they scored on their first four consecutive drives, and it was 31-7. Like, they scored 31 unanswered, and we're like, deuces, that's game.
Well, and even with that first drive from Notre Dame, you kind of came out of that one realizing that, yeah, they had the ball almost 10 minutes and Riley Leonard ran the ball nine times. And even at that touchdown, you're like, this is not sustainable.
No. But if they were going to have a chance to win, that's exactly what they were going to have to do. And you're going to have to peel off some first downs, though. And you're going to have to, your drives that didn't finish in touchdowns, you were going to have to, you know, milk and bleed a lot of that time off and keep Will Howard and Jeremiah Smith and Quinshon Judkins and Travion Henderson on the sidelines the entire time. Well, as it was, even a blink of an eye, you were back off the field. That offense was on. And Will Howard, dude, his playoff run, and I always say this, game manager is not a bad label. I think it is a really good label. He played about as perfect as a game manager could play in the playoffs. His four-game stretch, he completed 82 of 109 pass attempts.
Including 14 of 15 in the first half in the championship game.
That was 75% of his passes in the final four games. He threw for 1,150 yards in four games. 8 touchdowns, 2 interceptions. Mm-hmm. His 2 interceptions, they did not come when they were trailing or the game was tied.
Yeah.
They both came with leads. And so that's about as damn good of a performance as you could ask for a guy that he's not the elite quarterback.
No.
Everybody around him is, but that's what you need from that guy, efficiency and take care of the damn ball.
And one of those interceptions was against Texas when it was very clearly him trying to force the ball to Jeremiah Smith mm-hmm. because he hadn't touched the ball all game.
Yeah, that was about as good as you can get. And there, we've talked about Will Howard. Ryan Day deserves his flowers. Chip Kelly deserves his. There's another guy on this team that blows my mind when I think about why Ohio State was so difficult to defend for every single team. And he showed up last night as well. Danny and Dusty, here's Rust with SportsCenter. Ohio State is national champs after beating Notre Dame 34-23. In the college football playoff national championship game, tremendous run and finish in Notre Dame season. But for Ohio State to kind of bounce back and look, you lose to Oregon. That was a game that was on the road. You lose to Ohio State. I mean, those are seniors that have never beat Michigan. Seniors at Ohio State never beat Michigan.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Tough one for you.
That doesn't happen, to, especially to one of those teams that ends up winning a national title. So they got things back on the right track.
Especially that recruiting class. When you go down and look, it's JT, it's Sawyer. It's like you start looking and you're like, oh my God.
Yeah. They've just been outstanding. They have a Michigan problem. But now, like, it's Ryan Day got you a national title. Shove your Michigan problem where the sun don't shine, because titles last forever. One guy that just absolutely blows me, I think he's the most fun to watch on Ohio State, Emeka Egbuka.
Mm.
He became Ohio State's all-time leading receiver last night.
Really?
Uh-huh. All-time receptions leader with his 202nd reception. Think of that. He has never been the best receiver on Ohio State, and he's the all-time on any roster he's been on from 2021 through 2024. He's never been the best player on his own team.
He's number one in receptions and yards.
And it's because he's been there for 4 years.
Crazy.
Because the thing about Ohio State receivers, if you're that good, you're going to be gone after 3 years. He has been there for four seasons.
Yeah, Olave was 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
Boston was two. Marvin was two. Devin Smith was three.
Well, three. They've had to be there for three.
Chris Carter was two.
They all had to be there for 3 years.
Oh, yes. Yeah, no, I guess technically, yes.
That was like, oh, dang. Wow. Just to think of how productive he has been and not be the number one receiver. That's why, like, a guy like Emeka Egbuka, he's going to be just fine in the NFL, because everybody knows exactly what they're getting from him. You are getting, and what I love about him is not like he's a game breaker like Jeremiah Smith is or Marvin Harrison. The dude is one of the best perimeter blockers in all of college football. He is a spatial awareness master, where he'll find a soft spot. He reads a defense really well, always finds a way to get open. And he's totally okay with being the decoy. And he was in large spurts of this playoff run. You saw that they were scheming Jeremiah Smith open by using Emeka Egbuka to just get attention, because he's good enough to where you have to give him attention, but then you have to forget where number four is, for God's sakes, which is a crazy thing to think about. But that's how explosive, how good he can be. And I was a little bit surprised that when they said he broke the record for receptions and yards. But at the same time, you go, it kind of makes sense because he's been there for 4 years, you know?
Yeah, and I think the other part of this too is the change over the last couple of weeks after, you know, Jeremiah Smith goes bonkers against Oregon. Neither Texas nor Notre Dame was going to let that man do a damn thing.
No.
They said, no, we are not going to let that happen. And Egbuka kind of rises to the top of Carnell Tate. And I mean, they're not short on wide receiver targets, but he was the guy that kind of appeared whenever you needed him. And to be honest, last night, again, if he doesn't fumble, he's probably on his way to another big night, because Ohio State probably keeps the gas pedal down.
Yep. Yeah. I mean, six catches, 64 yards, not a bad day at the office for him. But he was one of those guys that I wanted to highlight because of just how impressive that is. And to think that he also did that with his freshman year, he only had 9 catches. So really, he has done it in 3 seasons, but his sophomore year, he had 74. Last year, he had 41. This year, he has 81 receptions. Emeka Egbuka is one of those guys that everybody's going to remember Jeremiah Smith. Everybody's going to remember Jack Sawyer and JT Tuimoloau, or Caleb Downs and Lathan Ransom in the back end, because all of those guys are really damn good and they're going to be really solid pros. But Emeka Egbuka is kind of one of those guys that kind of the straw that stirs the drink for Ohio State. He was so critical in every single one of their explosions that they went out on and jumped out to these big leads on teams. And that's the thing, like, that you talk about, that championship DNA. It's always like, who's going to be the next guy to step up, right? Who's going to be the guy that steps up that nobody is expecting to? Everybody should have, because Emeka Egbuka was one of the best receiver recruits in the entire country.
Yes.
coming out of Steilacoom up in Washington. But he's never been the guy who's been the number one.
Well, because the other guys that were over him were the number one wide receivers in the country. And Jeremiah Smith and Marvin Harrison Jr.
Yeah. Like, yeah. He was clearly number three of who you would try to slow down in that Ohio State offense. Because number one is Jeremiah Smith. Number two is your combination of backs of Travion Henderson and Quinshon Judkins. And then you go to Emeka Egbuka. The number three guy just happens to be the leading receiver in Ohio State history. Pretty good receiving lineage there. Yeah. Yeah.
I'm trying to think of like another comp of like a guy like that. And greatest show on turf? When you had Holt, Bruce, Falk?
Yeah, he would be Torrey Holt.
Yeah, right?
Like that's Hall of Fame worthy.
Like, you're really freaking good, but brother, we're worried about Isaac Bruce and Marshall Falk before we get to you.
Or it's like, you know, he would be Reggie Wayne with the Colts.
Yeah. Instead of Edge or Marvin. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, it's like kind of the same thing. He's really damn good. And that team is really good. Do you see Kirk Herbstreit crying after the game?
No.
You didn't see that?
Mm-mm.
People had big feelings about that.
Mm.
And I don't think we should when you realize he has a kid on the team.
Yeah.
But
he also probably shouldn't be calling the game.
Kirk Herbstreit also has a lot of Ohio State bias, and people have always called him on it, and he's always been like, I'm not biased.
Brother.
That showed. He's still the best.
No, I don't, he's fantastic, I think he probably shouldn't be calling that game.
No, I think he should have called that game because it didn't come across as we were watching the game. But it's like, I think that's okay. You know, like Tony Romo is going to have a little bit of bias towards the Cowboys. That's where he played.
Yeah.
Right? Like Brady, if he ever called any Patriots games, he's on Fox.
Yeah.
So rarely are you going to see him. But he's going to be like that. For the Patriots.
It might be a little negative.
Joel Klatt, 100% is that with Colorado.
Yeah.
Like, these are you played for them. Mm-hmm. Of course you are. I think Kirk Herbstreit does a very good job of when the game is on, though. It is, I'm going to call this as fair as I possibly can.
Except for the final minute 30 against Michigan.
Where he just took it on his own to blast everybody.
About Ryan Day. Yeah.
Well, that was Tennessee. That was a Tennessee game. Yeah. About Michigan. Yeah, but was he also wrong?
No.
They won the national title.
That's not the place for it. It's not the place for it.
Where is?
College game day.
Well, I mean, less people are watching that than college game day.
Just saying.
And I mean.
Well, I mean, it's like recusing yourself from a case.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, there's some inherent bias here. Probably shouldn't be here.
Yeah. But I think, we're not in the court of law. It's college football. I thought he did a good job. There's nothing he said was unfair to Notre Dame.
No, I don't think so.
Throughout the course of the game. But it was like, I saw people just slamming him for crying. I'm like, dude, his kid is on the team.
Yeah.
He played there. Like, what? You guys didn't know any of this? Did you not know Kirk Herbstreit played at Ohio State? They'll tell us every time every time they can, right? Like, I love Kirk Herbstreit. I think he's awesome.
I did appreciate Desmond Howard in the pregame needling away. Yeah, I know. Sometimes you just lose a lot to Michigan. You can see Herbie kind of like bite his tongue, like, can't say anything to him.
Again, though, Michigan guy.
But that's where I think it belongs.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, but he didn't do it until it was on the SVP thing when everybody was celebrating down the field. When Herbstreit was tearing up.
Oh, yeah, that's different.
Went back.
If you're talking about like on the call, then it's like
No, it wasn't on the call.
Okay,
it was not on the call. It was when they were doing the interviews after and he saw everybody down on the field.
Who cares?
Yeah, I love Herbstreit. I think that people getting upset about that are like, come on. Dude, there's so many other things that actually matter that you could be upset about.
Sure.
Right.
Yeah, I don't like in the course of the game. I'm like, it's dumb. But in post game, whatever.
Yeah.
So I'm saying pre game, post game, whatever. I don't care.
Well, Ohio State scored a touchdown on each of its first four drives. No other team has ever done that in a college football playoff or BCS championship final. So good for you, Ohio State. 14-2 national champions. We can turn the page and we can move on. To the National Football League.
Hum, babe.
Those playoffs were awesome. Danny Dusty on the Fan. Four playoff games in the National Football League, all four of them awesome. And they all came with a plethora of talking points that we can dissect and sparse through. Mm. I think one of in the game that we can start with how these games started, and then we can roll right on through to Sunday night's game, because that game was epic.
Yes.
The Bills-Ravens, we were all looking forward to it, and boy, did it deliver.
Delivered.
But let's start with the Chiefs and the Houston Texans.
The cheaters and the Texans? So Chiefs and Texans?
Oh, I see what you're doing there. Mm. Boy, a lot is being made of the officiating there in that game.
But surely,
is that where we want to start here?
Surely it must be the first time.
It's not. It's not. And now Warren Sharp is on the case, and I don't think that is good for our Chiefs homer and Chiefs hunk on the text line.
Mm.
Who, no matter what is going to be said with the data points that Warren Sharp has, I pretty much know how Chiefs hunk is going to respond, and I want him to know this right now. The Chiefs won that football game.
Mm-hmm.
And there, it was not, I want everybody to know this, not just Chiefs guy. The Chiefs won that game in the Houston Texans, and we will talk about what the Texans did not do to win that game.
Not put it away.
Oh my goodness. So many things. But here is what Warren Sharp of Sharp Football. Over the last 4 years, the Chiefs have played 11 playoff games. 0 games the Chiefs had more penalties. 10 games the Chiefs had, Chiefs opponents had more penalties. He went and he started crunching the numbers on this, and he did a deep dive into this. This is more than curious. He went and he looked at every team that has had at least 5 playoff games and how they compare. Okay. So over the last 5 playoff games, Chiefs have played in 11 because guess what? They're pretty dang good. Games with more or less penalty yardage than the opponent. The Chiefs have had 10 games where they've had less penalty yardage, only one where they have more. They have had 10 games with less penalties overall than their opponents. One game they had equal penalties in their last 11. That would be a plus 9 and plus 10 differential in both yardage and penalties.
Mm.
They are 10-1 in those games.
Mm.
But you can't guess what the one game is.
Mm.
Every other team in this is either net 1 or to like net negative 2. Okay, so not a lot of variance there between how many penalties and how much penalty yardage.
Oh, you mean something like neutral, which is what you probably strive for across the league?
Except for the Cincinnati Bengals, which has played 7 playoff games, only had one game where they have less yardage than their opponent. They are negative 5 in yards and only one game where they've had fewer penalties than their opponents, which is negative 4 differential.
They're just less disciplined. That's all it is.
They are 5-2 in those playoff games. There is an element, though, there are teams that are just less disciplined. Mm-hmm. This is where it gets a little bit... Uh-oh.
Yeah, when the sample size goes out this far and you see this drastic a difference...
This is where Warren Sharp gets... This perks my ears up.
Mm.
In the last 4 postseasons, there have been 7 roughing the passer penalties on opponents.
Mm-hmm.
There's only been 1 on Kansas City.
Mm-hmm.
There have been 4 unnecessary roughness on opponents.
Mm-hmm.
Only 1 on Kansas City.
Oh.
There have been 11 defensive pass interference or holding on opponents.
Mm.
There have been 2 on Kansas City.
They're just better, Dusty. They're just better.
Those numbers are wildly different.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's where
they're officiated different.
I start to go, huh.
It's Patriots-esque. It happens with every number one team. It happens with across sports. You're treated differently.
Yeah, when you have a
go elite, look at the Lakers
when you have
free
the
throw
best
rate.
Quarterback in the National Football League, the roughing the passer and the unnecessary roughness that 100%.
The Lakers free throw stuff
I agree.
Is insane. It doesn't matter what era of team.
Yeah.
You really. Just they take more free throws than anyone else by a significant margin.
Mm.
It is just, it's a thing that happens.
I think that has led to the Chiefs' fatigue, but it's also like boiling that game down to strictly officiating.
Oh, no, you can't do that.
You cannot do that because
the Texans shot themselves in both feet
so many times.
It was Yosemite Sam trying to put the pistols back in the holster and just over and over again.
That is to the element of what you're talking about, though, in that when you say, no, good teams, they just don't do well, that's mm-hmm. it right there. With what the Chiefs do is that they make you pay for every time you shoot yourself in the foot. Every time that there's one of those penalties, what do? They get points out of it. And that is crippling to any team in the playoffs, especially when you're playing a team like Kansas City. But let's get to what went right for the Chiefs and what went wrong for the Houston Texans. And look, officiating did go wrong for the Houston Texans. Danny and Dusty on the Fan.